naturally. But, and no pale nodding, you know, and nature had to go his own way. So what we did, we just opened, you know, the door so we could push the hind end of the person out and hang on to him.
Uh-huh.
We'll let it go.
Uh-huh.
And it worked. Came to a station all at once, army around with bayonets and swearing and tearing and what's going on. Who's throwing shit at on the soldiers? Nobody.
No.
Nobody did.
Uh-huh.
How not? There was a big general, and he had four square caps flying. There at the end. And the man jumping back and swearing. Then our highest officer in that. And it says, they all sick. Look. And the whole row is just something white sticking out.
Oh, no.
and busy.
Yeah, really.
And what actually happened, the train in Russia, I don't know if right now, but at that time, every mile there was a man with a flag.
Uh-huh.
That was a rule. Every mile there was a man with a flag. That means that mile is clear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the poor fella, he just let it go.
Yeah.
And he was just 2 feet away, and he probably had the whole chute right in his face.
Yeah.
There was no other way to get out of it.
Yeah.
But to make the story short, we managed. Out of 17,017, finally, through the winter, in the spring, get back to Wrangel
in Crimea.
That's how I get to Wrangel in Crimea. From there, I was surprised somebody came to me and started to speak German. And I was surprised, German, and a good German. And that was one of the former German army was volunteered in the Russian army to fight communists. And there they got villages. Malosh and all that, they were organized Zemstvos.
Right, yeah.
And they had the German officers there as commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Even one of my brother-in-laws was in there. And
Was that the first time you really had contact with Mennonites?
That's the first contact with Mennonites.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they asked me if I want to go in a German regiment.
Mm-hmm.
Just Germans in there. Sure, I said, go any place. So, and there they put me right away in the commandant. I was commandant already.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big shot at that time. So, and well, all greenhorn.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing of discipline, army discipline. That was none. Because they were not trained. They were just showed how to handle a gun, that's that. But nodding teached, and it couldn't.
There was no time.
No, it was no time for it. And then I was, I don't know how long in the Mennonite. It didn't took long. We came there for the summer, and then tried a little bit, but there was not much pack behind it. Mm-hmm. And finally, they gave a bush towards October, and it didn't took them long to get us out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And get us in the Crimea. We had the Perekop. That was the last time we tried something. And what happened, the Bolsheviks, they knew that Crimea, Perekop, mm-hmm. by Perekop, they knew exactly the water in there. And just at night, they went right on foot, right across that water, which divides Crimea from the main part,
mm-hmm.
and got them all asleep. And there was no reason at all. So finally, we tried to get on the ships. Now, there was no chance for a mortal to get on a ship. Just big shots and women and everything else went in the ship, and the rest had no chance at all, and they had to stay there and look for themselves.
So that ship would have gone probably to Germany, eh?
Pardon?
That ship, was that ship headed for Germany, or just...
I even don't know.
But just away from Russia, anyway.
Just away from Russia, I know that the Turkey quite a few of them went.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, they went through there, Constantinople.
Yeah. And so I was with my orderly at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on the west side of the railroad, and the railroad bank. And all at once, hooray, there they were, right on top of the railroad, and there the Russian, the Bolshevik Cossacks. And we were on the Tachanka, that's the wagon, what the Mennonites had, a light wagon. It was very, very easy, very maneuverable for a machine gun. We had a machine gun on that wagon,
mm-hmm.
and we turned left and plowed field and went in the west, just any place, just
mm-hmm.
west. And one village was stopped, German village stopped, stayed there overnight. And the same night, the Bolsheviks, the big hurrah,
mm-hmm.
Stavai said, give up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we give up, all right. There's hardly room enough to open on the floor to sleep, and we were kaput.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, and then they asked, are there any officers among you? And my uniform orderly. I knew he was a Bolshevik and prisoner. They took him prisoner, and they didn't give him any other mark on a job like orderly and so on. And he was quite a bit older than I was, about 40 years old. And we were just good friends. So I thought, well, my life is now in your hands. Because they just took him out and behind the house and shot him there. It was for somebody else that they purposed to clean up the mess. And they got up and told his name and what regiment he belonged in the Red Army, and that he is a prisoner of war, the white ones, and thanks, brothers, that you saved me. Very fine. Oh, they were very happy, and congratulations. And, well, if you know officers, then we have nothing here to do. And when?
Oh boy, what a close call.
Yeah. So, after he went, he said, you know what I went through? Because he said, if what, and we both would lay there.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So
how did you finally, where did you finally end up when you got out of, finally completely finished with the army?
That was it. Then we just went, three of us, a Russian and another German, three of us, went and to get any place, just to kill time. We didn't know what to do, where to.
Right.
No, just once. I couldn't go home. That's it. The worst. So we went north, and going up north, came to a beautiful village. So right away, so that's a German village, but different style than I know. It's different.
Yeah.
So, and I was kind of interested and started to inquire. All at once, she said, "Are you Germans?" "Yeah." "Do you know a Peter Dick?" "Yeah." Is our now regiment, and that German regiment, Deutsche Bataillon.
Right.
"Do you know?" "Yeah." And she gave us a very good meal. And then next day, I start investigate, and three villages farther is a guy from my regiment too. Jake Riediger. And I ask her if she knows. "Oh, yes, it's in Blumstein. There's Altenau, Menzelberg, and Blumstein, the third village." So, went there, and he made that proposition. He said, "You know what? My uncle Hem, he has no men in his family. It's six girls, and if you want, I can try to get you there for board." I said, "That would be too good to be true, but try it, and by God." And I said, "Yes, I'll take you." And I was there 4 years. And in the 4 years, we're just lousy everything with Bolsheviks. And even There's 500 population in Bloomstein. And there is by the fuel what we are communists.
Mm-hmm. From the Mennonites.
Mennonites, mm-hmm. Yeah. And this one side of the village where the bower full, you know, full Wirtschaft and two Wirtschaft. And the other side where the labor.
Mm-hmm.
Blacksmith or carpenter or anything. And he has a little bit of land.
Mm-hmm.
And the building on that and everything. In those 4 years, nobody ever squeaked.
Nobody ever told on you?
Yeah, never anybody. And I was all over. I couldn't hide. I was all over. When there was a meeting or something, I had to be there. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had a paper,
mm-hmm.
and my passport was right away not Alex Fisher, but Peter Jung. And just from the time where the first revolution started, and that was the rule. The papers all away if somebody get killed, because his whole family. That was open too. If somebody in a family got killed in a white army, then the whole family pays for it. His parents and family and his house that was taken. Mm-hmm. So I was Peter Jung, and Peter Jung, that's Peter Jung sitting in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I came to Canada legally as Peter Jung. My wife was Peter Jung. Yeah. And when I came to Canada and Quebec, the first thing I saw then one fella in through an interpreter, I told him that that's not mine. They looked at each lending card and that's not my name, but I had to get out, none of our business, you get just going. And then 5 years later, when I was in out west on the farm, and I signed a petition that I want to be a Canadian,
and
mm-hmm.
a citizen. And one day I took a bunch of hogs to Winnipeg, came back, and my wife said, a good looking guy, big guy, with a green hat, and I said, kind of a red pants here, big fella, want to see ya. I knew, because just a few days before I signed paper,
mm-hmm.
you want to see me. So next day I went to Winnipeg with the train. I was in St. Anne, the chain.
Ah, yes.
And I went to Winnipeg and went to his office. And here I am. I said, here are four names. Alexander Fisher, Alec Fisher, and then Alec, F-I-S-H-E-R, without a C. And here is a strange one, Alexander Peter Jung. Which one of the four names you want? I say Alexander Jung Fisher. That's my real name. That's where I'm born. Here are. And I had, by that time, I had already papers
mm-hmm.
from my high school, my birth certificate, and where I finished my high school, the graduation papers, and smuggled over. So,
so you had some proof.
I had some proof. I said, I don't want all that stuff. I just want under what name you want to be.
So he didn't care.
Yeah. So that's how about all those papers are now. Yeah, and then that made an awful impression on me for all the 4 years.
That you had been protected by everybody's silence.
Yeah, that I decided to be myself a Mennonite. And I never regretted it.
So how did you come to join the Mennonite Church? Was that in Russia? Did you allow yourself to be baptized, or?
Yes, in the Russia, there was a big friend, Jacob Johnson.
Jacob H. Johnson?
He wasn't very bad. Financial position. They had a family, and everybody was starving. We were starving for shape. And he often came to our village, to my future father-in-law. And the man I worked was the uncle to my future wife. And I went to him voluntary.
For instruction,
quite a ways, and I think 5 miles. And to the war, and even before the war, I was kind of drifted away from the Catholic Church. There were some reasons for it. But
why was that in particular? Was it just because you were separated from them, or were there other reasons?
We're separate, all right, but the Sunday we were together. Sunday we were together again. It's just I lost respect and finally nodding. And it was at that time something like here, the young fellows, they had their own ideas. And we had it quite a bit too.
So you studied with Jacob Jansen then? In preparation for baptism.
But he recognized my baptism, my small baptism.
Right.
He recognized. Then I had papers on that, and just papers to all of Johnny's. He's going to keep him as long as he lives.
And I suppose that's where you met Mrs. Fisher.
No, this one.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, well, pardon me.
I lost my first wife after 10 years of marriage. She had supposed to take her tonsils out, really bad tonsils, in Russia. But there, it was impossible, things like that. Revolution, war. And then became finally to adapt until Canada. We were finally so far to do that. Well, first 10 years, we didn't know if we have a penny or not.
Mm-hmm.
We had lots to eat.
Right.
There was lots to eat. But money.
You didn't have any.
Operations at that time. I had hemorrhoids.
Uh-huh.
And I asked the doctor how much. So $200. That was an awful lot of money.
Boy.
But I had to have it because my underwear were all full of blood. Say it was 5 years near on horseback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that irritated all
right. Right. Uh-huh.
And I wondered today, I'm 84 years old, and 2 days, and went through all. A bit along, I told that we slept in snowbanks.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice and warm. Yeah. And sometimes they would take your clothes off for a month.
Can I ask you a few quick questions yet? Who was your wife, first of all, your first wife?
Margaret Riediger.
Riediger.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And when did you get married?
First
in Verde.
Yeah, I was born in 1896.
Uh-huh.